Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply. It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. This is fast becoming the most popular show we do on the network. It's the Pep Talk. It's where we explore new and exciting peptides. Peptides are basically emerging science that only the doctors on the bleeding edge of medicine today are actually paying attention to. You're not going to walk into a GP's office and say, hey, I heard about this peptide. He's going to look at you like you have three heads, and rightfully so, because he hasn't been trained in these things, and they don't even know where to get trained. So I'm going to do two things at the top of today's show. First of all, I have to say today's show is dedicated to a good friend of mine named Curtis Dunn. We've been training at the same gym for a long time, and he suffered a stroke not too long ago, and he's been having a hard time coming back from it. And I can see it in his eyes that he wants to come back. And he's been seeing doctors. They offer nothing. They offer nothing new and exciting. They offer nothing to him other than, you know, just to go on with your life. And none of us want to hear that, right? We want to be fixed now, right? We want to know, at least, maybe not fixed now, but we want to know that there's hope. Like, oh, I actually may be able to get back to 99% of my past capabilities. And so this show is dedicated to Curtis, number one. Number two, if you're a physician and you've been told to listen to today's show by a patient or a colleague, and you want to be trained, you want to know how to take advantage of these new and exciting therapies. They are legal for you to prescribe, but where do you learn about peptides? I'll tell you where. You go to the International Peptide Society's webpage, and you join, and you get trained by some of the most brilliant physicians in the space about how these peptides can be used to help you do the what you went to medical school to do, and that's help people. Not medical coding and all that other nonsense that you're caught up in, but actually give people the kind of results that they're looking for. So today's show is dedicated to talking about peptides that will help resolve and recover from stroke and traumatic brain injury and CTE, chronic encephalitis, which causes the degradation of brain tissue over time. And obviously, once you lose that real estate, it's hard to ever get it back. And so today we are rejoined by Dr. Elizabeth Yerth. How you doing, Dr. Yerth?
I'm good, Carl. Thanks for having me again.
And you also have a colleague with you today, and that's Brian Graham. How you doing, Brian?
Yes, sir. I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me.
And Brian actually was instrumental in this discussion because he's actually working at your clinic specifically on peptides that help people with brain injuries, but also help prevent them from happening in the first place if you are in a contact type sport. So you're going to want to really pay attention because, let's face it, prevention is absolutely a better approach than having to fix something after, correct?
Correct. Yeah, playing catch up is never easy. So that's what we're trying to mitigate with these programs we're developing here.
So, Dr. Yerth, I want to start with you because I want to talk about the areas of opportunity when we talk about the brain. The things that we want to influence in order to affect recovery and resolution from a brain injury, whether it's an ischemic injury or a blunt force trauma type injury.
So that's really where the peptides, I think, have a novel approach that we really have no ability to do with any other medications. Right now, there's not, you know, your friend, I'm sorry to hear about him. There's really not anything to offer these people from the traditional realm. And the same thing is true for our post-concussion. We sort of say, okay, rest your brain, but really not anything to offer. So when we look at what happens with these brain injuries, stroke, traumatic brain injury, there's sort of a host of events. And you know, one of the big things is that there's a breakdown of the blood-brain barrier, and you get an influx of things that shouldn't really be in the brain and that are damaging to the brain. And so that's one of the things that you want to sort of halt early. So you need to improve the metabolic changes that are occurring in the brain very acutely to the injury. And the more acute that you can treat those patients, so the closer to the time of the injury, the better off you're going to be. The other thing we always need to look at is how do you get more blood flow back to the brain? And whenever there's been a stroke, typically, at least an ischemic stroke, not so much strokes can be bleeds or they can be ischemic, but there's compromise to the vascular flow. And we all know if you stop the blood flow to your pinky finger, it's going to die and fall off. And the same thing is true of your brain. If you drop blood flow, eventually that portion of the brain is going to die. And obviously, unless we can revascularize it acutely, there's going to be long-term consequences associated with that. Even small concussions, we can see on MRI scans far down the road, people who have had concussions. And you'll see these little spots in the brain, these little white spots in the brain that are areas where the brain has lost blood flow. And in general, we say, oh, well, you know, they're small, they didn't do anything, but they do. And the more those occur, the more problems you're going to have. And so we really have to get what we call neovascularization. We need new blood flow. The other thing you have to do is to really restrict the excitotoxicity. So when there's been damage to the brain, there's this excitotoxic responses, and you get changes in glutathione peroxidase, superoxide dismutase, all of these pieces that increase oxidative stress to the brain. So we want to be able to reduce oxidative stress to the brain and help the brain heal. And there's certain peptides that we can use that will help do that. In our own day-to-day existence, every day there's oxidative stresses that are occurring to our brain. And the way we typically recover from those is deep sleep. We sleep, and the more time you spend in deep sleep, that's what we consider the cleanup period of the brain. The more time you can spend in deep sleep, the more likelihood that you're going to reduce those oxidative stresses. During deep sleep, there's actually a better interchange of getting the trashy stuff out of your brain. So if you're sleeping poorly, waking up a lot for some reason, then you're going to have more likelihood of damage to the brain. A lot of people in our world use these oil rings, and those will tell you how much time you spend in different stages of sleep. And if you're not spending adequate amounts in deep sleep, your brain never goes in those cleanup phases. So we can actually use some peptides that will help to sort of induce those phases as well. So we can see that changes the oxidative formation, neovascularization, and then really how do we now get new brain cells to form? We used to think that you couldn't do that. We used to think that damage to the brain is damage to the brain and you can't regain it. But we now actually know that you can get sprouting of brain cells, you can get new brain cells, so we can actually repair damaged brain. So where the old paradigm was, oh, well, once there's brain damage that doesn't, it can't be fixed. It can. And we can use peptides that really help that. There's peptides that will improve things like brain-derived neurotrophic factor, what we call BDNF, that will potentially help to repair brain tissue that's already been damaged. So it's not a lost cause once you've had these injuries or you've started down a path already of early Alzheimer's or early cognitive impairments.
So the three areas of opportunity, if I could summarize, are improved blood flow, or correct. What we really want to do is we want to actually stimulate new blood pathways into the brain, because whether it's blunt force trauma or ischemia, what ends up happening is blood stops getting into there, oxygen stops being delivered, blood sugar stops being delivered. So basically you're shutting the machinery down, number one, which in and of itself can cause death, never mind the actual event. Right. The other thing is metabolic debris or metabolic waste removal, right? You have an ischemic event. You've got all of this necrotic tissue, and it just, I mean, just think about it, right? You know, you if you have dead skin on your arm, you got to get rid of it in order for the healing process to start in the first place. And then the last opportunity is what I'd like to call new neuronal sprouting, new nerves kind of growing around where, you know, nerves are funny. They're just, if anybody who likes gardening, which I hate gardening, but Elisa has taught me to like it. You know, when you take a rose bush and you prune it, right beneath the prune spot, you have new growth that come out and grow around it. And neurons do exactly the same thing. We know that neuroplasticity, which we did an entire show about yesterday, quite frankly, neuroplasticity exists even in the aged brain, when certain things are done, when you improve blood flow, when you reduce metabolic waste, and we're going to call oxidative stress part of the metabolic waste process, and you then can do things that stimulate new neuronal sprouting, the brain will actually recollateralize around the damaged area and fix itself. So this idea that I've had a stroke and I've lost these faculties and that's it for me, that's not true. Am I being too simplistic about this?
No, I think that's a nice, simple but correct summary of it. Let's add one more thing, because we're becoming more and more aware of inflammation as right. as a culprit in all of these injuries as well, both in cognitive impairments as well as in these post-traumatic injuries. And so I think the other thing we really need to look at are things that reduce inflammation in the brain. And that, you know, that ties a little bit into all of that, but it may be, as we're finding with everything, cancers and everything, that inflammation is super important to address. And that's difficult to address in the brain. And we actually have, you and I talked a little bit about a new peptide that's just come to market that may have a very anti-inflammatory effect on the brain. So that may be one more, so the fourth thing that we really need to look at is how do we reduce inflammation.
So I want to add to that for a second, because I think that by and large, many people don't understand the role of inflammation versus what happens when chronic inflammation occurs. So inflammation is a signal to the body to pay attention to this tissue and repair it. But what happens in an environment where we are chronically inflamed, and we're talking about overactivation of the immune system. So when we talk about inflammation, we're talking about the army of the immune system. The immune system is tasked with going and cleaning up metabolic debris. But here's the problem. If you have fire departments all over your city and they're all sitting there waiting for a fire to break out, and a big fire breaks out downtown and three of them can dispatch their crews and their trucks to that one fire and put it out and everybody goes home, this is great. This is a perfect example of inflammation. Something sticks its head up. The body goes, let's get it. We resolve it. We fix it. We go back to the firehouse. Everybody goes to sleep. But if you have a city that's burning down, the fire department can't respond. They just can't. And they don't even know what to respond to, because is this fire more of a threat than that fire? This is what happens in the chronically inflamed person. This is why chronic inflammation actually stalls the healing process. Quite frankly, it also affects mood and memory and so many other things when we talk about the brain. But inflammation is important, but chronic inflammation is the pox on fixing anything in the brain. What do you think about those statements?
That's exactly right. It's a really good point. There is a difference between acute inflammation, which is necessary for healing. In orthopedics, we've started using, for instance, platelet cells, stem cells, for the same purpose. We have a chronic injury. Our body it has a disrupted immune function to that area. If we can recreate an acute inflammatory response, sometimes we can encourage healing. So that's great acutely. Long term, it does damage. And so there's a very difference between acute inflammation and chronic inflammation. You're right. What we're speaking to here is that chronic inflammatory changes. Brain dementias, for instance, we now are thinking of almost like a type 4 diabetic, because we know that the chronic inflammation that occurs from high blood sugar to the brain is very damaging to the brain. And so you're right. We make a big distinction between chronic and acute inflammation.
Mike Baer, I'm not ignoring your question, but I can't answer it this early on in this interview. But if you stick around, I promise that question will be answered about your wife, perimenopausal and migraines. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. I just don't want to derail the discussion about stroke and ischemic events. So let's go to Brian for a second. So Brian, yes. Your specialty is not necessarily working with people who have had an ischemic event or the damage done, but you're working right. on some projects with individuals like football players and so on who have contact sports, who are prone to ending up with multiple events, and protecting their brain in advance. Talk about that before we start talking about stroke and CTE and all that other stuff.
Correct. So again, what we're talking about is nipping it early. We are addressing these issues early on so they can't have this cascade of events that has a host of issues that we're trying to play catch up with. So specifically to touch on, kind of recapture what you guys were discussing, discussing is we're thinking of the neuroprotective side and the neurorestorative side. This is modulated through blood flow, through inflammation, through improving metabolism, you know, things of that nature. When our system is primed, it is better suited to handle an event, a trauma, for example. And one thing I'd like to add with that inflammation, especially with the brain tends to set up a perimeter around that injury, around that insult. So that inflammation spreads far beyond that injury or event. So when we can turn off that inflammatory cascade early on, we are essentially mitigating that collateral damage. So yeah, again, just to touch on, we are pre-treating people. We are setting them up with protocols or regimens that basically optimizes their system to better deal with a stress and insult and to turn off that inflammatory cascade early on and then modulate blood flow immediately, turn on the metabolism, upregulate those things that we need to that side of trauma.
What peptides are you using? Let's say a stack that you're using to help pre-treat someone before the actual event.
So the ultimate regulator we're talking about is BPC-157 that we're so familiar with. I mean, its capacity to modulate blood flow and inflammation is key. Actually, Dr. Yerth, if you don't mind touching on that compelling mouse study, I know it is a mouse model, but it's incredible just to talk about. And first of all, the safety tolerability behind BPC, I mean, is incredible in itself, which I have no hesitation with administering or recommending this to patients as far as its safety profile goes.
Even very young people.
Correct.
Your audience is, we know, very familiar, very, you know, you have a very bright audience who's familiar with a lot of these things, BPC being talked about before, but we love BPC, and there's a great study that came out about a year ago where they actually took mice and they dropped a weight on the mouse's head, and
Could you imagine the mice when they all get together? What's your study about? They're going to give me testosterone, and I'm going to copulate all day long. What about you? Oh, they're going to drop a weight on my head.
Yeah, right.
So they took one group, and they actually pre-treated them with BPC, and actually not at a super high dose, a dose that would be very reasonable to use in humans, so it wasn't this massive dose. And that group, when they dropped the weight on their head, actually came out of it being able to function like a normal mouse. The other group went on and had, with the same load, had severe traumatic brain injury to the point where they could not function, they couldn't feed, they couldn't walk. So it was really incredible how neuroprotective it is. So one of the things Brian has been trying to do is sort of get that word out to our athletes, especially our young football players, boxers, those people who are going to suffer brain trauma, can we protect against that? You know, we're all too familiar now with the ongoing worry of chronic traumatic encephalopathy. I have 5 kids. I wouldn't let any of them play football. And yet I have patients who were football players. And you know, if you're a football person, you're going to let your kid play football. If that's the case, I think these kids should be protected. And
yes.
So one of the things we're doing is trying to get to the training rooms. Brian's trying to get out there and talk right. So that people realize there is things that we might be able to do.
Yeah, just
So let me ask you a question. So we just did this whole dissertation about the importance of understanding an inflammatory response. And BPC is being used. I use a 0.5 milligram injection post-workout. I use 0.5 milligram on days off because it helps you recover. Well, the fact that it helps you recover, does it not say that it's probably one of the most powerful resolving agents for inflammation?
And remember that you're right. We do want some acute inflammatory changes, but you don't want in the brain, particularly, you don't want a massive inflammatory response. That massive inflammatory response actually has some very negative effects in the brain. It's what we call a secondary trauma that occurs with influx of things that actually cause damage. And so the brain is a little unique in that you don't want a big, huge inflammatory response like you might if you have a wound that needs to heal. So really the brain is a little unique in that realm. And so probably the way BPC is working a bit protectively is avoiding the secondary influences of the metabolic changes that occur, we call heat shock proteins that occur, that start a whole cascade of damaging events after the initial trauma. So you avoid that secondary trauma, which we actually think is maybe worse than the first trauma to the brain.
Interesting.
Okay. That's correct. Yeah,
and that makes perfect sense from an ischemic point of view. A lot of people get worse the weeks after a stroke than immediately after a stroke, because what's happening is in an attempt for the brain to go and fix things, you end up with all these workers and all this concrete splashed everywhere, and everything around the area that was damaged now becomes hyperinflamed and it starts to become damaged as well. So that's an interesting observation. Go ahead, Brian. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was just going to say, I like to look at it more as a modulatory peptide, in the sense that when it's needed, the troops are upregulated to that side of trauma or to that side of need. And then when it's not needed, things are quiet and dissipate. It's not this upregulation or this anti-inflammatory constant effect. It has an ability to upregulate inflammation, downregulate inflammation. And again, it's an ultimate modulatory peptide, which is why it seems to be so effective and so well tolerated.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point. We always tease, we call BPC the all-knowing peptide, because it can upregulate, downregulate. It's why it's so safe. It doesn't really ever overdo anything. And so it sort of has this very nice balancing effect. And you know, first time we ever heard about BPC years ago, we're like, okay, surely there's not something that really is that all-knowing. But BPC really does seem to kind of come into play when it's needed, and not be in play when it's not. And
so I can't help thinking about adaptogenic compounds when I think about your discussion. It sounds like BPC is an adaptogenic peptide.
Yes, you're right. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, interesting. So let's go on and start talking about, I'm going to throw some peptides out and speak about them and how they affect the three different or four different areas of opportunity that we discussed. I remember early on, some of the early research on thymus and beta 4 showed that small amounts, 1 to 2 milligrams, within 6 hours of an ischemic event, whether it was brain or cardiac, by the way, it's 6 months out, there was no collateral damage. Necrotic tissue was reduced. It was almost like the person didn't have the stroke. People have argued with me and said, that's in rodents, not in humans. What do you think about thymus and beta 4 having it as a rescue, like having it in your freezer, never using it, but kind of like breaking the glass and pulling the alarm, using it post ischemic event? What do you think about it?
I'll let Brian talk.
I think that's key. Again, that you hit the nail on the head when you said to use it as a rescue. The power of that and the fact that it is so angiogenic isn't to be taken lightly. So I think its effects and its benefits are very powerful and need to be utilized correctly. If you want to add anything.
Right. It has a huge angiogenic effect. And you're right. When we want to get more blood flow to that area to heal tissue, it's incredibly powerful. And we use it a lot for people post-injuries. Any of our post-surgical patients, things like that, we'll put them on some thymus and beta 4. They'll heal much more rapidly. And I agree. We do the same thing with how people keep thymus and alpha 1 around in case they get viral illnesses, because it will stabilize the immune system. But thymus and beta 4 has a very, very pro-angiogenic effect. That's great. You post that ischemic stroke, that's exactly what you need. You don't want to do that forever and ever, right? Because we know that same pro-angiogenic effect could have downsides. We don't want to just keep having more and more and more cell growth. That's cancer, right? So that, unlike BPC, which is very, very regulatory to itself, thymus and beta, not quite so much. And we love thymus and beta, but it is one that we say, you know, use with a doctor or somebody who is a certified peptide specialist who understands how do you use it, how long do you use it, what kind of doses do you use it, for what purpose. I think it's hugely powerful, it's hugely beneficial, but it's one of those big guns that you got to know how to use correctly.
Okay, with that being the case, is there a window of opportunity with thymus and beta 4 and that closes? If someone has a stroke in January, they're listening to this show today, they're going, wow, I wonder if TB4 would help me. Is it too late for TB4 to help them?
I don't think so, because thymus and beta 4 is going to have, you know, we can use it post chronic injuries as well to help heal tissue. So I do think if you put it in with a host of a few other things, that if we're making new, if we increase, for instance, BDNF, brain derived neurotrophic factor, and we're trying to increase neuronal sprouting, all of that also needs more blood flow. So I actually think that thymus and beta 4 can be pulled in a chronic event as well, used for a brief period of time, maybe, you know, a 12-week period, for instance, to really help encourage increased blood flow to that area. So we will use it down the road as well.
I mean, we are hopeful that the body is going that direction and reestablishing that blood flow to that area. It's just such a glacial process. And the power behind peptides is that we can really kick that into overdrive, essentially, and really get those results that we're looking for a lot quicker. So that's the idea behind that.
You know, I want to inject something here early on, no pun intended, because what we're really talking about here is leveraging neuroplasticity, which is a phenomenon that we all possess when all switches are turned on. But from all of my experimentation with things like LSD and microdosed LSD and other BDNF regulators, it's the magic doesn't happen when you're using these agents. The magic happens actually when you stop using them and the next couple weeks, because what happens is when you turn BDNF on and you turn blood flow on and you turn neuronal sprouting and you turn vascular endothelial growth factors and other growth factors on, what you make your brain do in the next 2 weeks determines the trajectory of what it's going to fix in your brain. So if you use these things and you just sit in your chair for 2 weeks, don't expect a lot to happen. But if you use these things and you go out and you do the things you used to be able to do, albeit you're not going to be able to do them well, but if you do that, what you're telling your brain is, these are the things I want you to fix. So these, none of these agents will work if you just take them and sit home and watch TV all day long. You must go back out, just like you did as an infant, and learn to walk again and start doing these tasks so the machinery you've turned on goes, oh, we're going to be doing this every day. We better start fixing this area of the brain. Is that an overstatement, Dr. Yerth?
No, that's great. We were actually, one of my other peptide specialists and I were doing a podcast, and he actually brought up that point. Even in people like you and I, who, if we really want to maybe try and improve memory or something, you use the peptide. At the same time, go start taking guitar lessons. Go start learning a new language. You actually want to create that neuronal sprouting, and the way to do that is to exercise the brain in a behavior it's not used to. Similar to, you know, if I want to go build muscle, I can't just, you know, take growth hormone secretagogues and sit in my chair. I need to go and work the muscles that I'm trying to grow. And so we really, you know, I know Brian, when he's talking to these patients, says, okay, and again, even in you and I, use these peptides and then go out and actually try something new, learn something new, do something different. In the person who's post-traumatic brain injury, you know, they oftentimes are pretty limited, but that's a window of time when you get them and you really start having them learn these skills or relearn these skills. That's incredibly important. I'm glad you brought that up.
Even recommending visualization techniques post-injury,
yes.
It limits screen time. It limits the mental stress to an extent where, again, it is at their own capacity. But when they have those techniques on board, we do see a greater, more profound impact on their ability to recoup.
Another one I'd like to throw out is that we know is also a nootropic, but it does increase BDNF. But more importantly, it really has a profound effect on blood flow. And anything that has a profound effect on blood flow is going to also answer that second requirement of being able to reduce metabolic debris, because when the blood gets in, it takes stuff out with it. And that is Dihexa. Now, this is a transdermal that I rub on my neck a few times a week. And when I take 6 to 8 clicks, I feel it. I literally feel like it's not a stimulant, but I just feel like all of a sudden I'm wide awake. Would Dihexa work for someone in a post-ischemic or a TBI type of environment?
Definitely, because Dihexa we know has a synaptogenic effect. It's actually creating new synapses between those neurons. So we actually want your brain one message to get from here to here to here. And Dihexa seems to have a very important role there. So Dihexa actually may play a role where none of these other peptides do, in this improvement in synaptogenesis. It also appears to have it works on what's called hepatocyte growth factor, and it also probably has a big role in sort of clearing out the bad stuff. But some pretty novel, the work they've done with Parkinson's patients and Dihexa, they've actually been able to not just prevent worsening of the disorder, but really completely in some patients normalizing motor function in these patients, and that's probably its synaptogenic effect. It's improving the messaging between the neurons.
Very interesting. Brian, you want to talk?
In here, and he actually has clients.
I have a patient,
but I really want him to talk a little.
You know what? We're gonna take a break anyway, and we're gonna come back. I want to talk about DSIP a little bit, because even though it's considered a sleep peptide, it seems to be in the wheelhouse of this discussion. Brian, thanks for being here today with us.
Absolutely, thank you very much, Carl.
And we're gonna take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with more of Dr. Yerth. Stay tuned. BPC-157 is quite possibly the most popular injectable peptide used by athletes and weekend warriors alike. Its ability to help you recover faster and make nagging injuries seem to just disappear is legend. Now you can take Body Protection Complex oral supplement and get all the benefits of injectable BPC-157. DrSeeds.com has produced the first orally delivered BPC product using peptide protein sequences that are easily absorbed in the gut, and that will help you recover faster from workout to workout. And now Superhuman Radio listeners can save 20% off their first order of Body Protection Complex at drseeds.com. That's drseeds.com. Just use coupon code SHR at checkout. Don't waste another minute dealing with nagging pain or feeling like you just don't recover like you used to. Body Protection Complex is your answer. Go to drseeds.com, use coupon code SHR today. Who wants to have better sex? That's a stupid question. Everybody wants to have better sex. And you can start having better sex if you go to the website bluechew.com, bluechew.com. Use the code SHR and get a free order of your choice of the only two FDA-approved drugs to treat erectile dysfunction, sildenafil or tadalafil. Best of all, they're chewable, so they start to work in minutes. Go to bluechew, bluechew.com. Use code SHR and you will get your first order for free. You do have to pay $5 for shipping, but come on, it's an easy deal. Who wants to have better sex? Okay, get busy. You know how to do it now.
Men and women, you've heard about hormone optimization. Do you feel like it's something you want to look into? RenewLifeRx.com is the place to start. Their doctors can help you with the solutions. RenewLifeRx.com has a simple process for lab work, consultation, and taking a deep dive into where your hormone levels can be improved. Superhuman Radio listeners get 30% off your initial lab work and consultation. Go to RenewLifeRx.com to schedule your no-obligation phone consultation today. Feel younger, get in better shape, and be more productive at RenewLifeRx.com.
Hey, this is Carl. For 14 years, you've heard me talk about CanSee eye drops, and they being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at now 61 years old. But I regularly get emails and messages from people who've been using CanSee and having some amazing results. Recently, I got an email from a fellow named Chad, who, because he was on dexamethasone eye drops for over 6 months, developed the cataract. CanSee eye drops actually reduced my cataract to the point where even my doctor has a hard time finding it. I will never stop using CanSee eye drops twice a day. I've been using them since 2008, he says. And you should be too. There is no better way to keep your eyes healthy and seeing clearly than CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com today and get on board, and we will both be looking into the future with very clear vision.
Quest Nutrition makes bars, cookies, chips, and pizzas out of complete dairy-based proteins. Our products minimize net carbs and sugar without sacrificing taste. Each delicious chocolate-flavored chip, cookie chunk, and crunchy crumble is custom-made to maintain Quest macros. It's time to enjoy foods that work for you, not against you. It's time to enjoy your Quest.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back. Excuse me. We return with Dr. Betsy Yerth. Brian had to leave. We have a little background noise again. Do you hear that? Just a little bit. Just a tiny bit. I don't know if it's an open door or something like that. But anyway, it's not terrible. Don't worry about it. Anyway, so let's talk about DSIP. I use DSIP because it's called deep sleep inducing peptide. But it did not do anything to improve my sleep. In fact, I didn't notice anything at all about it. But then I read a recent study that shows that DSIP seems to improve blood flow to the brain dramatically. What about DSIP as a player in resolving a stroke and or TBI?
Hang on, Carl.
No.
So I agree. I was so excited about DSIP for all our people who can't sleep. And really have not seen where people come back and go, oh, that was the answer for me. There are a few people who do seem to respond really well to it from that realm, but for the most part, I agree with you. But it does potentially play a huge role in a whole lot of other processes, and brain repair may be one of them. It does appear, and when you look at people who use the Oura Ring, we can measure deep sleep, that even though people don't seem to have they still may have more trouble falling asleep, they still may wake up, their deep sleep time definitely does improve. So even sometimes, though, they don't feel like they were sleeping as well, they probably got more efficient sleep. And as we mentioned before, that period of time is a very, very important time for the brain to heal itself. And so if you don't get enough deep sleep, you're going to have some issues. So if we can induce a higher period of time in deep sleep post these injuries, that's a really nice time for that cleanup. Remember, you talked about all that cellular debris that occurred. That period of time, so if we can get deep sleep up to over an hour in the post-traumatic brain injury people or in the stroke people, so we want to look at their deep sleep. And I like to actually measure that in anybody who has cognitive impairment and try and get them up to a higher percentage, 30% of their time in deep sleep, and we'll get more repair mechanisms. DSIP has a very interesting response also in that it's very mood regulating. So they call it deep sleep-inducing peptide, which makes it sound like you're going into a coma, but it actually does not make you feel groggy. So if you took it even during the day for people, there has some benefits on ACTH, so it's stress relieving. You can use it, for instance, people who have addictions. You can use it to help them with addictions because of its effect on ACTH. So it's really nice if you have anybody who is withdrawing from or wants to get off of opioids or alcohol. It really has a nice effect there because of some of its stabilization on the adrenal gland. The other thing, interestingly, about DSAP, and this may have, again, to do with some of its deep sleep-inducing effects, is that it affects luteinizing hormone and hence subsequently testosterone. So you can actually, with DSIP used appropriately at night, you can see boosts in testosterone by about 100 points. And we talked about testosterone and subsequently some of its aromatization into estrogen and how beneficial that may be to brain healing as well.
Yes.
And so that may be another sort of place where DSIP may be having some interesting benefits. So I agree with you. I think its name is a little deceptive, deep sleep-inducing peptide, because all of us just think of, you know, it's going to put us into a coma. But think more about that deep sleep period. If we can even really increase that significantly in people who are trying to recover from a stroke, that you're going to see a period of brain healing that they don't typically get. It's all wired to do more of its job. It probably is working a lot on oxidative stresses during that period of time. So that's probably its main effects.
So one of the peptides I want to talk about, and a lot of people are going to think, wait a minute, Carl, why this peptide for this discussion? And I want to talk about it now because you said, anything that seems to cause a rise in luteinizing hormone seems to improve the quality of sleep architecture. When I first started using HCG at 100 IUs a night before bed, I doubled my deep sleep, and it continues to be there as long as I keep using HCG. The reason I want to talk about HCG now, because it is a peptide, and I don't want to get off onto sex steroids and their role in inflammation and recovery for the brain, but you did kind of mention estradiol. Estradiol is a powerful anti-inflammatory. It actually activates the inflammatory process, the suppression of inflammation by docking in a receptor called the FAF, fibroblast activation factor receptor, which every cell has. It actually can shut down inflammation in a chronic situation. And so instead of talking about hormones, testosterone, and their role, I want to talk about HCG because, we talk about how women are much more complex than men because they actually can manufacture another human being. And as a result of that, women possess a variety of systems that are designed to bio-hijack the body to allow it to have and build a human being, even if the environment is hostile.
Right.
And one of those things is HCG, because HCG seems to be an adaptogenic peptide in causing the hormones to all be where they need to be for the next 9 months, and then after that, we can all fall apart. And so what about HCG in the recovery of stroke because of its improvement in sleep architecture, but also its ability to modulate and attenuate sex steroids?
If I haven't seen, and it's probably out there, but I haven't seen any research on it. I think it's a great idea. I agree with you. HCG has a dramatic effect on inducing deep sleep, and you will see significant improvement in deep sleep. So we've already talked about its benefit there. If you can improve deep sleep, you can improve recovery. I think its downstream effect on improving testosterone and acting as an adaptogenic effect on our hormones is going to be huge as well. You're right. It has a very protective effect, which is why you can be starving in the middle of Africa and still have a baby who's born healthy, right?
Right.
So if you think about its ability to act in a repair process, it's probably huge. It'd be interesting to see. I'll have to go back and, now that we've talked, and kind of look at the studies on that and sort of see.
It raises pregnenolone. It raises progesterone. I mean, it's almost like a super peptide. It's like anything that, it's almost like snake oil. It's like anything that ails you, because if you're building a human being, the body dedicates all its resources to that. It'll steal minerals from your bones to give to the baby. All of that is a result of the reproductive fitness process that the body literally hijacks the woman's body and says, you know, I don't care if you're going to die after this, you're going to give birth to this baby.
Right. So. Yeah, and we talked about BPC, these adaptogenic peptides are so nice because there's not a whole lot of downsides to them. You know, if you put somebody on HCG post a stroke, post a traumatic brain injury, are you really going to have any downsides, either female or male? No, you're really not going to see any huge risks to them. And so the things that you can use, they have adaptogenic effects. Anything that's adaptogenic, remember, it balances. It keeps things so you're not, you know, shooting way up here, lowering something else. And so by doing that, you have these great protective effects. So I think that would be interesting to go back and look at the studies. Are you aware of any studies on HCG?
No, I just make this stuff up, Dr. York. I really do. I'm not kidding. It comes to me, and I'm like, you know, it makes sense to me. Am I crazy? But okay.
Yeah. So we'll go back and look and see what's out there.
Yeah.
And then we can do our own little experiment.
So let's talk about a couple other peptides that are kind of popular. Let's talk about C-Max, C-Lank, and also what's the one I take at night now? Isn't that funny? I just forgot it. But anyway, what about C-Max and C-Lank?
Yeah, I think we want to cover C-Lank, C-Max, and definitely cerebrolysin, because we love cerebrolysin
yes.
for its effects as well. C-Lank and C-Max are great because they're intranasal, which is nice. You don't have to inject them. And so something that can get straight to the brain, anything that you do intranasal can have a very nice neural effect, because you can actually get to the brain very easily right through the nose. In fact, you can do surgery through the nose and get to the brain. So C-Lank and C-Max are, I think, first got their start in Russia, and they're really nice peptides for anti-anxiety. So we use C-Lank a lot as an intranasal peptide, and it really reduces anxiety. It balances neurotransmitters. It's a really nice, actually, interestingly, brain performance enhancing peptide. It was interesting. I was just doing a lecture on sort of sports performance. And in a lot of, for instance, a lot of Russia, places, you know, places that use more peptides than we do, they put all their athletes on it because it actually helps you to not get stressed if you're a football player and you have.
They use it with the astronauts that they send up into space for long periods of time in the space station. They give it to them.
Right, exactly. And so if you can keep your brain sort of in a very nice, mellow state, the big, great military would be another great place for this, right? You need to keep the brain really stable and mellow, but still be able to perform to a T. And so what it allows you to do is focus at a very low, so in a stressful situation, keep your stress low and still be able to focus.
Do you think it's having an effect on one of the categories? Do you think it's increasing blood flow because that's indicative of the acute effects of being able to focus better?
I think it has less of an androgenic effect. I think it's effect more on neurotransmitters than it is on its androgenic effect.
Okay.
You know, which is. Peptides have an androgenic effect always. I love them. I think they're great, but they have a little bit more of a risk, right? When we're increasing angiogenesis, if there is any little cancer cells forming, more blood flow to cancer cells is not a good thing. So I do think it puts it into a little safer realm. It's been a really good peptide for us, for some of our people with more attention deficit disorders, things like that, to help them with focus. But I've just started experimenting a lot with more our sort of precision athletes. For instance, people who are doing shooting competitions, things like that.
Okay.
It's been really effective there. I think
Cerebrolysin, you mentioned. Cerebrolysin is also considered a nootropic peptide. How does it figure in? What role does it play, let's say, in the resolution of stroke or a TBI?
I think cerebrolysin is really important for stroke resolution. And in fact, in Europe, they do it as an IV infusion post-stroke, and it has approval for that there. It probably works best in a pretty high dose post-stroke. So if you could get somebody either IV infusion or willing to give themselves a fair amount injections post-stroke, it really does work better at a high volume when you're trying to improve post-injury. Cerebrolysin really is a neural repair. It's a nootropic that has effect on markedly improving brain-derived neurotrophic factor. So it's a really a neural repair peptide. And it may be, for instance, your friend who just had the stroke, it may be one of the most important pieces in that healing recovery that can be used. But again, we do think it maybe need to be done at a very high level. The same thing true with your cognitive impairment patients or any kind of really more severe brain injury. You have to get a lot in. And so IV infusions or a lot of injections. But again, it's also been used, actually, interestingly enough, in ocular migraines. He had somebody who talked about migraines. That may be more hormonal migraine he was describing, but ocular migraines. It improves synaptic function. It improves BDNF. We use it a lot protectively. We do a lot of genetic analysis on our patients. One of the genes we look at are people who don't produce enough BDNF. And we're working with a company now that actually here in Boulder called SomaLogix that's actually measuring proteomics. So we actually can look at proteins and see, oh, you're not making enough of this protein. Can we improve it? So you can use it preventatively in that. In that realm. So I give myself, I have a mother with dementia. I have a gene that I have less BDNF. So I use cerebrolysin every day just to raise.
How much? I use 215 milligrams a day. Is that what you use?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
It's a big volume injection, right? I mean,
yeah.
And some people have a hard time. Probably post-injury, you need to get like double that.
Right.
So you need to use very high doses of it, and that's difficult and expensive.
The other peptide I want to talk about is actually possibly from the research, one of the most important peptides in the role of resolution of a stroke or a TBI, and actually perhaps not just arresting but reversing encephalopathy, and that is the FGL parenthetically L. Can you talk about that? This is a relatively new peptide. It's a synthesized peptide. It's not something we make naturally. Is that correct?
Right. It stands for FG loop peptide.
Loop peptide.
And I think it works on what's called the cell adhesion, natural cell adhesion, correct me if I'm wrong, natural cell adhesion molecule. And it probably works in two ways. One is that it actually is it's expressed on glial cells. So this NCAM, this FGL is expressed on glial cells, and you can directly create this fibroblastic growth factor. So again, it's improving fibroblast growth.
And that fibroblast growth factors improve neuronal sprouting. It's like putting Miracle-Grow on your rose bush. That's what fibroblast growth factors do. They make nerves grow.
Right, and it appears that it's working very specifically on these brain neurons, right? So it actually has an effect on like the glial cells. And so it may be one of the few things that we can do that really has a very, very direct effect on the cells that we really want to treat. And that study really just came out, I think it was just published like 3 weeks ago, showing that it has a marked benefit for hippocampal inflammation. Mm. Remember, hippocampus is where your memories are stored. And so when you look at any strokes that affect, and a lot of micro ischemic events. So people with chronic hypertension and develop dementias, a lot of those are micro ischemic strokes, so little tiny strokes at the hippocampus. And so eventually they lose any ability to remember anything. And so it may have a really nice effect on hippocampal repair and also reducing inflammation in the hippocampus, which may be key to some of the Alzheimer's patients. So I think it's just starting in some studies in, could it really be a very novel way to treat Alzheimer's related dementia because of its effect on hippocampal damage and hippocampal repair and hippocampal inflammation. So it's pretty cool. It's very new. And I think we're just kind of getting into using it more. I haven't used any clients yet. And so we'll sort of have to play with it a little bit more.
So this is designed to be a primer. And if all I wanted to achieve with today's discussion was to let people know that there exists these therapies for people who have had strokes or traumatic brain injuries, chronic traumatic brain injuries. They're now told that they're suffering from encephalopathy. Their brain is literally starting to shrink. It isn't what you think it is. There are things that can be done, but you need to find a doctor. You can't. This information is to tell you that there's hope, but you need to find a doctor. If you are out on the West Coast, please plug your, because we're going to take a break and come back and answer Mike Baer's question, but plug your location.
So we're in Boulder, in the foothills of beautiful Boulder, Colorado. My company is Boulder Longevity Institute, and we actually have one of the few medically managed peptide programs. We go through a very comprehensive program with our clients, and love for you guys to give us a call and talk to us more. We'll do some phone consultations, and we can work in about 8 different states. I'm licensed, or you can fly here and see us. It's a good vacation spot. I always show the slide when I'm talking about brain injuries and peptides. I always show a slide of like a shaved head with a tattoo that says, if you can see this, please call a peptide specialist.
That's good.
Because, right, you know, you and I get in a horrible injury. We want somebody there right away.
Right.
Who is injecting stuff into us because we want that repair to start right away. And unfortunately, there's not very many doctors who are savvy to that. So we really want our spouses to be equipped with a little packet that they can.
Yes. Yes. I have a freezer full of things that I only will use the day that something happens to me. BoulderLongevity.com is the website. If you are a physician or you want your physician to be able to do this sort of stuff, tell them to look for the International Peptide Society. Get trained, and they can have prescriptions filled at TaylorMade Compounding in Nicholasville, Kentucky. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to deviate a little bit slightly from the discussion and come back and talk a little bit about migraines. We're going to answer Mike Baer's question. Stay tuned. Imagine how successful your life would be if you could double your focus, double your mental energy, double your problem solving, your creativity, your willpower. Sounds too good to be true, right? That's what I thought until someone handed me a bottle of Qualia Focus. Qualia Focus is a mental performance formula that combines 24 of the most powerful molecules on earth to noticeably boost your brain power within just a few days of taking it, or your money back. Qualia Focus blows coffee away, but a serving actually has less caffeine than a cup of coffee. That's because it boosts brain power the healthy way. Just go to neurohacker.com. That's NEUROHACKER.com and enter coupon code SHR at checkout for an extra 15% off. And a serving of Qualia Focus costs 1/5 of that coffee you're drinking right now. Unlike coffee, Qualia Focus nourishes your brain in a comprehensive, healthy way for amazing brain power you noticed in just a couple days. That's neurohacker.com to try Qualia Focus and discount code SHR at checkout for an extra 15% off. All backed by a 100-day money-back guarantee. Qualia Focus is a life changer, I promise you. Try it now for amazing brain power at neurohacker.com.
Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000. Or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to redcon1.com. That's REDCON, the number 1.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today.
Sleep is one of the most important factors in maintaining health and longevity. And in today's environment, with all the artificial light we're exposed to, there is nothing more important to use to protecting your sleep than blue blocking glasses. And there's only one blue blocking glasses that I will trust ever, and that's Blue Blocks. BLUBLOX. If you go to the website blueblocks.com and use the code SHR15, you'll save 15% off the single single best blue blocking glasses in the world, because you can wear them comfortably and still function, watch TV, work on your computer, but it blocks all of the important blue and green light that has been responsible for shutting down melatonin production and causing people to sleep poorly. Don't waste another night of sleep without wearing blue blocks, BLUBLOX, tonight. Put them on at 7 p.m. and you'll be asleep by 9 p.m. and you'll get the best night's sleep you've ever had. If you've never used them before, you are missing out. BlueBlocks.com. Use the code SHR15 to save 15% off.
There's a phenomenon today. So many of us sit for hours each day. Slowly, our bodies respond by shortening certain muscles. The psoas gets shorter and shorter over time. It leads to lower back problems, stiffness when standing, and inhibits your running performance. Now there's PsoRite.com. That's PSO-RITE.com. PsoRite is a device that allows you to stretch your psoas muscle and return them to normal function. And it does it better than any stretching movement or chiropractic adjustment can. You can use it in your home, office, or at the gym. Experience what thousands of people already know. Check out PSO-RITE.com and save 20% off when you use the code SHR.
Are you looking for a better way to absorb the nutrients you know you need? Do what I do and start your day with lipospheric supplements from Live On Labs. Unlike pills and powders, Live On's patented liposomal encapsulation technology transports nutrients like vitamin C, vitamin B, glutathione, acetyl L-carnitine, and alpha lipoic acid to where they need to be, your cells. Visit try.liveonlabs.com/Carl to learn why I take these supplements every day to help me perform in the gym and in life. That's try.liveonlabs.com/Carl.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
You know what, Dr. Yurt, I forgot to ask you a critical question. A lot of these therapies we're talking about obviously work best if the intervention occurs soon after the ischemic event or the traumatic event. But what if somebody has had a stroke like my friend Curtis Dunn? I think he had this stroke at the beginning of the year, maybe it was the end of last year. Is there still hope for him to leverage some of these therapies to help regain more of his faculties?
And definitely, you know, we've seen with cerebral lysin, Dihexa, that you can have a very reparative effect. So whereas the early stage of treatment is oftentimes designed to prevent the damage, right, to prevent the damage, and that's great. Once damage has occurred, we still are going to get benefit by increasing blood flow, increasing neurogenesis. So I think that the combination of using Dihexa, perhaps, this new peptide FGL, the FG loop peptide, and cerebrolysin, BPC still have marked benefit. And we've seen that. We actually have had some patients who were pretty more traumatic brain injury, probably dealt more with traumatic brain injury in this clinic, but had pretty severe damage. We had a woman who was a lawyer who got in a bad car accident and really, was very dysfunctional. She couldn't, and she was 3 years post. And by using a combination of cerebrolysin, actually C-Lank helped her with kind of the anxiety piece of that. We used cerebrolysin and a little Dihexa and BPC, and she was able to improve significantly. This is 3 years of doing everything traditional medicine had to offer her, and she still needed help with basic tasks around the house. She got back to actually working part-time, and so we're seeing that was 3 years post. So I think there's significant benefit that you can get from the peptides, even pretty far down the road. The Dihexa study with the Parkinson's patients showed repair of motor neurons. And these are patients who have had years and years and years of damage.
The peptide I couldn't think of before, which I've been using just 5 milligrams before bed, is Epitalon. That's been shown to increase melatonin production, pinolon production, and some of the other pineal gland. Would that be beneficial just from a sleep architecture, or is there any extrinsic value to Epitalon when we talk about stroke?
Well, I mean, Epitalon is a healing peptide, right? It improves telomerase activity, so it's sort of what we consider a longevity peptide in a sense. So from that realm, even though I'm not sure it has a very direct effect, probably its indirect effects in sort of improving overall health is probably going to be beneficial, but I'm not sure it would have as much of a direct effect
Okay. Let's ask. So Mike Baer asked the question, and I've seen this so many times now, it's just crazy. His wife is going through the change of life. She's going through menopause, and she suffers from violent monthly, especially the migraines. What can help? So I have an opinion. I'm sure you have a very educated opinion. What could Mike's wife do other than get on HRT? Yeah.
So the big thing that happens, and this is sort of in young girls when they're first starting to get their period, but then women perimenopausally, is that you tend to be in a very estrogen dominant phase. And so you have a lot higher estrogen levels than progesterone levels. And that's probably the main cause. Remember, right before women get their period, their progesterone levels drop. And so now they become very estrogen dominant. And it explains not only the headaches, but why women get sort of mean and bitchy and achy and everything else, is this drop in progesterone. So a lot of women really respond dramatically simply to progesterone. We also know now, and kind of bring into the peptide realm, you might have heard of what's called the calcitonin D-related peptide. These are actually drugs that have been recently introduced that actually inhibit a peptide, because we know that one of the things that estrogen dominant may play a role in it, and why migraines are more common in women, is upregulation of something called calcitonin gene-related peptide, which causes significant meningeal inflammation. And that may be a bad thing. That's why long-term migraines, you can actually look at an MRI scan and somebody who has repetitive migraines and see changes that look similar to little vascular insults. So if I look at a patient when they're 70 and see these little changes, I can predict that they've had migraines for years and years. And that may be the effect of this calcitonin G-related peptide causing meningeal inflammation. So if progesterone is not enough, you can sometimes throw in something to inhibit. And there's two companies now that make medications that you inhibit calcitonin gene-related peptide. So we're talking about all the great benefits of peptides. Well, there's some peptides that when they get too high create problems, calcitonin gene-related peptide or CGRP being one of them. And we know that that peptide becomes particularly problematic to women right about the time when their estrogen levels are much significantly higher than their progesterone. So you have to achieve that balance between estrogen and progesterone. Progesterone is so, so, so helpful for women in migraines. It's amazing. I always, and depression and anxiety, I always say that very few women come to me with Prozac deficiencies. A lot more come to me with progesterone deficiencies, but they've been treated with Prozac to treat it. So I think that may be really a simple solution. And if she doesn't want to go to a doctor and do it, you can even go over the counter and buy even topical progesterone at a health food store. You have to use a lot of it, but that sometimes even that can help. So I encourage you to look into that, as well as if that doesn't help, the CGRP inhibitors have been pretty significantly beneficial. They're injections you give yourself once a month. It's a little injection you give yourself once a month. It blocks the high levels of CGRP, which tend to fluctuate and become higher, or it may be that women become more sensitive to it right around the time of their periods.
What does CGRP stand for?
Calcitonin gene-related peptide.
Okay, so one of the things that affects calcitonin is vitamin D. So when your vitamin D levels get very low, your parathyroid has to produce more calcitonin because it has to do the work for mineral absorption that the vitamin D would have done. So would it be wise for her to, A, go and have her vitamin D levels tested?
Definitely. I check vitamin D at all. Well, we do it in everybody because it has such far-reaching effects. But you definitely want her vitamin D levels to be above 60. Yeah. That seems to be the level where we start. If it falls below that, the migraines become more significant as well. Don't trust that your doctor said, oh, her vitamin D levels are normal, because normal on a blood test is anywhere from 30 to 100. If your levels are below...
Yeah, if you're in the 30s, you're sick.
Yeah, you're sick. Exactly.
And you see how dark I am, Dr. Betsy. I don't know if you could tell in this light, but yeah. Elisa said that I'm too dark now. I need to stop laying in the sun. But I'm a sun worshiper because I believe in evolutionary medicine, and I think that the best way to get my vitamin D is to get out there in the sun and lay in the sun and let my body do what it does best. So another thing, Mike, is that she could get out in the sun more, assuming she's not fair-skinned, start slow. But there's another thing that I want to bring into the discussion. In the early 1920s, before migraines were called migraines, they were called hypoglycemic headaches. They were called hypoglycemic headaches because they saw that when women, especially, went into deep bouts of hypoglycemia, they ended up with tunnel vision, severe pain, sensory changes, and they called them hypoglycemic headaches. Somewhere along the line, the name changed to migraines. And they knew that they were preceded by a sensation. Most people who have migraines, they'll tell you, oh my God, I'm going to have a migraine. Something happens. They get a tingling in the back of their neck. Their vision twinkles. They see an aura. Something changes. Oh, I'm going to have a migraine. And usually the migraine comes on within minutes to, you know, a couple dozen minutes from that initial sensory situation. So the two things that we've done shows on was the use of exogenous ketones. Number one, if you take an exogenous ketone dose of about 9 or more grams of beta-hydroxybutyrate, when you get that sensation, the migraine either doesn't come on or lasts a couple minutes and goes away. Number one, and why is that? Because if, in fact, it is truly a hypoglycemic event, giving the brain a different substrate to power itself saves it from feeling like it's starving and causing these events, number one. Number two, Dr. Betsy just said something that's critical. When progesterone is low and estrogen is high, women have a really hard time managing blood sugar. This is why they get hot flashes, they get subjective tremor, they get anxiety. These are from hypoglycemia. So they're on this roller coaster of high and low blood sugar levels. And by her going online and buying an over-the-counter 2% or even 5% progesterone cream and starting to use it a couple times a day in low doses, a pump here, a pump there, she may find out that all of these events go away completely.
Right.
Completely. But the reality is the real thing. And so Mike put up there that – let me put up some of his posts. So the doctor wants to put her on birth control. I've never heard of anything so stupid in my life because she's not going to have babies anymore. She doesn't need birth control. She needs bioidentical HRT. Then he put on, we just started her on magnesium 400 and vitamin D. Magnesium is good. That's actually very, very good because magnesium helps to change both GLUT4 and insulin sensitivity. Right. So, yes, she will see less probably of these events.
Although 400 milligrams is probably too low of a dose.
I was just going to say,
that's probably underdosed her vitamin D as well. She needs probably at least 5,000 IUs of vitamin D and at least 500, I would say 1,000 milligrams of magnesium to really get a significant, you know, so riboflavin, magnesium, vitamin D, butterbur, all helpful. But ultimately, quite frankly, these are probably progesterone-induced headaches.
Yes. Yes, I agree. I agree. And he said that I named her symptoms. So I'm going to tell a funny story and then we're going to end the show. In 2002, I got very sick. I was using a lot of performance enhancing drugs and I was using aromatase inhibitors. And I actually gave myself menopause. In fact, I know that I gave myself menopause because I was using drugs that didn't aromatize, like Trenbolone, and I was using aromatase inhibitors, and I started to develop insomnia, subjective tremor. I felt like somebody stuck a vibrator up my butt. But no one could. If I said, feel my hand, I don't feel anything. God, I'm shaking like a leaf. I don't understand. I started getting hot flashes, sweating, anxiety. I almost drove myself to the hospital one night because I didn't know what was wrong with me. And then I went on a website called Power Surge. I put my symptoms in, and all of a sudden I was surrounded by all these women. And I thought, wow, if guys went through this, they would have found an answer to menopause years ago. But I gave myself menopause. That's why I know these symptoms, Mike, because I lived with them for about a year until I figured out what was wrong with me, and I got my testosterone levels back up and blah, blah, blah. But the reality is that she would really do well going to see someone here in Louisville. I'd go see somebody like Dr. Carl Page. He can get her straightened out. He can put her on bioidentical HRT. He's even a member of the International Peptide Society, and he can work with peptides with her. Because what she really needs to do is get on HRT. She needs to see where her testosterone, her progesterone, her estrogen, all those levels are, and get them straight. What do you think, Dr. Betsy?
The birth control pill is going to actually have the opposite effect. It's a high dose estrogen, so now her estrogen levels are going to be higher. It actually does not have progesterone in it. It has progestins, which are not the same thing. So actually, any progesterone she has gets further suppressed. Her headaches will get worse, and she'll have all the other bad consequences of having high dose estrogen, progestins, which are probably more carcinogenic. And you know, this is a really simple fix with a good dose of progesterone, balancing the hormones. It's so important. And remember, the migraines are just an underlying symptom of inflammation. And so the low progesterone is creating inflammation other places as well. It's why we see women that age also start to get more joint pain. There's receptors for progesterone on our joints. So the joints will get stiffer and achier. And so progesterone, it's such a cure-all for women. They sleep. It's amazing.
Did we miss anything on the landscape of the peptides for stroke and traumatic brain injury recovery?
I guess I just a little bit about using things that raise IGF. So because when you can get IGF up, that also is really important for post, particularly immediately post-injury. In fact, we've seen that very high levels of IGF immediately post-injury have a very, very nice effect on not getting that those secondary excitotoxic effects of the brain and trauma itself.
Great point.
So, don't forget our simple ones that we sort of think of more for our sort of overall health, muscle building, but things like CJC and Ipamorelin or even sometimes stronger things can be really helpful for like your friend. You definitely want those types of things.
Well, are you, so I, for many years, I used IGF-1 long R3
right.
at fairly high doses. I've used up to a milligram a day. Mm-hmm. And I tried to make it site specific, so I would inject it directly into the muscles that I had trained. Are you a fan of IGF-1 long R3? Do you think it's a mistake to just upregulate and use something so long acting?
I think sometimes it has some really nice benefits. For instance, if I had a traumatic brain injury or a stroke, I would want IGF because you really want a very potent IGF stimulator, and that's by far the most potent that there is. I don't use it much in any other realm because I do think it's difficult and that it's probably a little too strong and it's hard to regulate enough. But I definitely acutely post a brain injury think I if it was me, I'd put myself on a high dose IGF stimulant for a brief period of time.
So I think that your last point here is great because it's kind of like saying, okay, we're going to plant this garden. Let's start with really good dirt. And the foundation of your garden is the dirt you start with. And in this case here, growth hormone and all of its downstream metabolites must be in place for things like, you know, thymosin beta 4 leverages growth hormone and growth factors. Without those growth hormone growth factors, it doesn't do its job. BPC-157 leverages growth hormone and growth factors. Without the presence of those growth factors, it can't do its job. So ending the show on that point is critical. Without good soil, you're not going to grow good tomatoes. That's all there is
exactly.
to it. Yeah. Dr. Yur, thanks so much for making time. I know you're very, very busy. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you, Carl. I always love talking to you.
Okay. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Right.
And that's it for today. Please feel free to share this show around. This show can really help a lot of people. There's a lot of people out there who are going to suffer from stroke, have suffered from stroke or traumatic brain injury, and this show may actually change the outcome of their lives. Thank you for listening today. We'll see you next week.